Thank you. Welcome back to the Drive Time. Joining me on the line right now is our good friend, and I'll tell you, a lot of listeners are just digging the conversation we had last time. My good friend, Inky Mark from Dauphin, Manitoba. How's everything going out there, Inky?
Well, spring has arrived, so we're pretty happy.
Well, temperatures are starting to peak up there. And
yes, they are, and it's good and windy, and the snow is disappearing.
Well, let's get right to it if we can. We've got Mr. Duffy's trial has been ongoing now. I think we're at day six or something along those lines. Let's start, if we can, by talking about what's happening at the Duffy trial. His lawyer has done everything to make it look as though he has done nothing wrong. He has followed the rules. Unfortunately, the rules have been elastic, and that's really what has caught Mr. Duffy off guard.
I would say I'm actually very surprised that the enforcement of the rules are what they are, if you believe what Mike Duffy and his lawyer are stating. On the House side, all the expenses are scrutinized very carefully. I mean, I could send in a bill for $10 and they'll look through it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to believe that side by side, the two houses, one house is so different than the other side.
Well, the thing that gets me, you know, is, I mean, this audit was basically foisted upon the Senate by the Parliament, and yet Parliament isn't open to the same kind of audit, are they? I mean, they've said basically, no, we don't need to be audited like this.
Well, as a whole, it probably hasn't been, but the rules are very stringent. I spent 13 years there, and you just don't get to spend the way you want to spend.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are times that people, you know, even my term, that people would send money to the party for whatever reason, you know, small amounts, but that's about it. But
mm-hmm.
all the other things that have come up, which is a no-no, whether it's gifting or padding a job, or I think the House side probably used to do that more. A lot more than it did, say, over the last 10 years. But the controller on the MP's expenses is quite stringent at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, from every indicator we're seeing, I mean, they're basically saying that, you know, Duffy, he followed the rules the best he could, the residency compliance aspect of it. Is the only thing we're going to be able to get this guy on is taking the $90,000?
Perhaps. I mean, they're debating, even the Crown lawyers are saying perhaps Duffy shouldn't have been appointed, right? Well, so whose fault's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if the man couldn't represent PEI as he should have, then he shouldn't have been appointed. But, of course, Harper needed a high-profile individual to help promote his cause and help him win the election. And that's exactly what happened. So he basically used Duffy and then threw him under the bus, just like he did the other two senators.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about his partisan work, and now we're hearing from Mr. Odson anyway that part of their job as a senator, the implied work anyway, is to be partisan. So, again, all of that stuff that Duffy spent money on and invoiced and got expensed on, according to Odson anyway, these things are things that were part of his job.
I think that's the makeup of the Senate. As we know, the Senate is appointed, it's a political group of people. They're all appointed because of who they are and their contribution to the party. So obviously when they're there, they're going to work for the party. Unless you're an independent, you're going to be work for the person who sent you there.
Mm-hmm.
It's only common sense, and if that's the way the Senate always operated, then so be it. That's until they change the rules. But until they make the place elected, I don't think anything's going to change because they're partisan.
Is that the only option, though, an elected senator? I mean, they'd still be partisan as elected senators. Is there no way that they can be a fully nonpartisan independent body from Parliament? Like, is that not something the senators could decide to do? Look, the partisan nature of this space has caused us nothing but grief. If we were to look at it from a solely nonpartisan viewpoint, where we come in there and we represent the people whose provinces we're supposed to represent and represent their ideals and values, I mean, is that something that is a pipe dream? Is that just a fantasy for a guy like me?
Well, that couldn't happen unless you have a constitutional change to change the way senators get there. And I think the only way you can make a nonpartisan is to have them all be independent.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be just like now, X number of them represent each province or territory, and they're elected on their merit, and then they represent the region they come from. But as long as there's politics involved, no different on the House side.
Right.
We have the same problem. You know, very few of them, you look at Harper's caucus, very few of them will stand up for their own riding.
Well, and the ones that do get tossed, right? Or marginalized.
Well, that's the fear. The fear is you do get marginalized. I mean, there are times even when I sat in the House, some of my colleagues around me, they're looking down the way, and they're I know what they're looking. They're looking at the, you know, some of the, the people that, look after the party, like the whip, House leader. They don't want them. They don't want to be seen sitting with me, you know, because I don't fall in line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a bully system, and people are fearful for their livelihood, basically, and that's why they jump through the hoops when they're asked to.
Well, as LeVar Payne said last week when he was on, this hour is 22 minutes, I guess you got to dance with the guy that brung you, right? And
that's the way it operates.
Well, that's, and again, you know, when people are voting, this is the problem that voters have. I mean, this is why only 49% participated last time. I mean, they weren't happy with whoever the leaders were of the various parties. They didn't bother to show up. Now, we know the conservatives will vote come hell or high water. I haven't seen an occasion yet where the conservatives have said, oh, I don't like the leader, I'm not going to vote. I mean, these people vote.
Yeah, but like today, I was just reading the stuff on the internet, and with the deployment of Ukraine, I just read that Trudeau is going to support it. So, and this is the same problem. He supported C-51, right, at the initial stages, when the poll numbers were high, that the public wanted the C-51 through because of fear. Now that's all changed, and so in a way, when you look at those two parties, a lot of times you wonder what is really the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what a lot of people are throwing their hands up. I mean, we really have to, but they've obviously got to find some way of. I mean, all the opposition parties. I mean, the NDP obviously very different from the Conservatives. They've made that sort of their stake. But with the Liberals, you know, what we're seeing is. There, as you just pointed out, I mean, there really isn't a lot of difference. There are some differences, obviously, the position of progressives, for instance, within the party. But when it comes to the fast and steady rules of Parliament, I mean, they had 13 years to change a lot of this already, and they didn't, right?
Right. And actually, the irony is that even when I was in opposition for many years, the statistics show that over half the time, I would say almost 60% of the time, the opposition parties voted with the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty well the norm.
So I guess what we really need now is leadership that defines itself as something extremely different, that's willing to maybe free up the votes consistently. I mean, one of the things I hear from voters all the time is they're tired of watching their MPs just vote in lockstep with their party. I mean, even I myself, I mean, I've been on a couple of boards, I'm sure you've been on a few boards, and I've never seen an organization like the Conservative Party of Canada where every single time, every single member agrees. It never, ever happens.
Well, that's the epitome of Harper's way of doing business, and it shows in the House, and it shows he has full control of his caucus, and that's the way it is until he's relieved of the job and someone else shows up. But who knows what they'll do? You
mm-hmm.
know, because they all want power. They all want, you know, to make all the decisions. I mean, they're just plain not democratic. That's what it comes down to.
That's probably the best way to put it, I think, at this
point.
And
the thing is, with people, I think people have to start looking for parties that want to stand up for the country,
mm-hmm.
not for the party, for the country. I think we tend to lose sight of that all the time. What's good for the country? What's good for Canada?
Mm-hmm.
It's not what's good for my party because we're looking for votes. You know, I even tweeted on today, I said, the only purpose Harper's doing this is because he thinks he's going to get votes from Ukrainian Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe in that because I've spent a lot of years and a lot of time working with Ukrainian Canadians in this country over the over the...
isn't there a difference between being a Ukrainian and an ethnic Russian Ukrainian, though? I mean, isn't there a difference? Because we know that the region that's under fire right now, I mean, Kenny's told us our guys aren't going there, our guys and gals, but the long and short of it is we are going to definitely be drawn into this. But we're talking about a region that for 75 years has basically been under the thumb of the Soviet Union. These people are ethnically Russian because the Ukrainians that were natural to the region were either deported or moved into other Russian territories, right?
That's true. Everything, the Dnieper River divides the country into two blocks, east and west. Everything east of the Dnieper River basically is Ukrainian or Russian influence.
Mm-hmm.
Everything west is European influence. That's a fact of life and history.
So sending Canadian troops there now for, well, they're calling it a training exercise, but let's be honest with ourselves, right? I mean, what is it that we can train them on, you know? I mean, what are we teaching them that they haven't already learned somewhere else? The Americans have been there. The European Union has been involved in the region for a number of years. I mean, what is it they're learning from the Canadian troops?
I actually don't know. The Americans are there. Everybody's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to teach them the same skills, basically.
Well, it reminds me of the incursion into Syria. I mean, one of the things that Kenny said was that Canada will not support Russia's illegal activities in eastern Ukraine. That was one of the things Kenny said today. And yet they're more than willing to do essentially what Vladimir Putin has done in Crimea to Syria.
Exactly.
So how is, I mean, I don't understand how these guys can rationalize that. I mean, on one hand, it's illegal if the Russians are doing it, but if we do it, it's legal for some reason.
I think they say it because they probably realize most people don't pay attention and
mm-hmm.
don't understand what's happening in depth, the conflict. You know, I mean, over and over again, we know the whole Ukrainian problem is created by the Americans. Overthrow of a democratically elected government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Harper never brings that up, or Kenny, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just put their own position for it because it's all about votes. It's all about potential votes down the road. But that's all it's all about.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, but because right now we've got this involvement in Syria, right? And then they're saying that we need to go there because we need to train the Iraqi Peshmerga forces. That's the pretense here. We're there to train those guys. And yet the Americans have been there since 2001.
Right.
The Americans have been training these guys and gals. I'm assuming it's all men, though, being where the force is coming from. But I mean, what are we training them on? What are we training them on? I mean, the Americans have been training them for 10 years. What are they learning from us that they couldn't learn from the Americans?
I think Harper just wants to play a war with the big boys. That's my own opinion.
Well, you know what? More and more every day. That's what we're hearing more and more every day. I think.
So I mean, really, when you look at our military inventory, what do we actually have? You know.
Well, we don't really have a lot. That is the problem.
We're putting our own troops in harm's way, even though they keep saying, "Oh no, we're not on the front line." Next thing you know, we have a casualty on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way this government operates, you can't believe what they tell us, anyways.
Well, you know, you were a long sitting member of Parliament. You were there for many, many years.
2 years.
And I mean, recently, you know, we saw this meeting in Panama with the United States and Canada and the other Pan-American countries, and Harper's position towards Cuba. I mean, Canada has always been on the side of Cuba. We've never put sanctions forth. We've never isolated them. We didn't add them, as far as I know, to any kind of terrorism-promoting list, at least as far as I know. When did that change? Do you know anything about that, Inky, when Canada changed its views? I mean, other than, obviously, with this Harper government. But is it something that just happened with this government?
I think he changed his views when he went to the meeting of the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Canadians are thankful they can go to Cuba, you know, and get a lot of money, get a lot of bang for their buck, right, for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't for Pierre that got the ball rolling. None of that would have happened. Now America wants to basically go in there and take over the country,
mm-hmm.
you know, like they do everywhere else. And all of a sudden, Harper's preaching to Cuba about human rights and democracy. I mean, maybe he should look in his own backyard,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's just so ironic.
Well, there's just a lot of chest pumping coming from this government, and I gotta say, as a resident of this country, it's unwarranted. Let's be frank here. I mean, these guys have nothing to pump their chests over.
And our reputation is going down the drain.
Mm-hmm. Internationally,
there's a good article today about where we rank, how Canada is seen even in the Americas. I mean, and certainly all this war stuff certainly doesn't give us much status on the world stage. And you can't keep throwing darts at people and keep criticizing them and hopefully to rebuild those bridges down the road.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work. I mean, it takes a lifetime to develop relationships, but the way Harper operates, I guess he, in the short term, he's always a short-term thinker, so to him it doesn't matter. It's about retaining his crown, and that's how he does his business.
Mm-hmm. Now, I hear, are you going to be running as an independent this time around at Inky?
Yes, I am.
Are you getting much feedback from the folks out there? I mean, you were their elected representative for a number of years. You must have a base.
Actually, since I retired, not much has changed. People still call the house and ask for help, and only because the local MP is basically just a parrot for Mr. Harper and a rubber stamp, and basically brings his message from Ottawa back to his riding, and people aren't happy with that.
Well, no, because the role of a member of parliament, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, though, is to bring the views and voice of the people of the riding for whom they represent to Ottawa, not the other way around, right?
That's what democracy is all about.
Well, I moderated the debates here during the last federal election, last couple, for our local cable show, and that was the one question we asked every candidate. Can you assure us as voters that that's the role you will be providing to the voters? And, of course, every one of them said the same thing. Even our current member, Rick Norlock, said, my job is to represent the viewpoints of Northumberland, Quinty West, to Ottawa, not the other way around. And yet we really, for the most part, haven't seen that.
That doesn't happen too often. Probably 99% of the time, they just parrot whatever the party wants them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they get to Ottawa, they realize that the system of control is in place, and if you want to go up the ladder, you better shut your mouth, do as you're told. If you want to run again for the party, you shut your mouth and do as you're told. There's not a lot of leeway. Sure, they put you on committees, you can do the work, but committees have no authority. All they do is publish reports or collect dust. I learned that when I first went to Ottawa in 97. Because I sat on the transportation committee, and we had piles of documents. And I said, well, why do we have these piles of documents, and why don't we get things done? And, well, because they don't. They just do studies, travel the country, write reports, collect dust. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. We do this over and over and over again. Just such nonsense.
Well, today there was a report out on Twitter. This is from a gentleman who's trying to get access to information. And it's going to cost him $5,000 to access information that the ministry, quite frankly, should have their hands on already. This is information that they were supposed to present to committee, to the Public Safety Committee. This is about Bill C-51.
Right.
And he has asked, he and his associates have asked for the information, and they were told it's going to take 477 hours of work, and that it's going to cost just under $5,000 for them to get this information. The thing that peeves me the most about this, other than the fact that it's going to take so long, is that we've already paid for this information.
That's right. It's actually public. It belongs to the people of the country. And the other sad point is, I've experienced over the past, when you get information through access, half of it is blacked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a common practice in Ottawa. And why should that be allowed? I mean, it's public information when you get through access.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's about the people of this country. It's not about a bunch of politicians who want to control the whole system.
Well, and that's what it's become. I mean, I know they've already been, this issue has already been brought forth to the federal ombudsman, if I remember correctly. They've already brought this forth. There was already a complaint lodged by a citizens group for the same thing. I mean, yet they're continuing to do this. They're billing constituents for hours worked, for work that they've already done. And as I pointed out earlier, I mean, this is information that was requested at the committee, and the Justice Minister refused to provide Randall Garrison the information. He says
those people are paid a salary to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So is this all overtime?
Well, that's the big question, right? I mean, Randall Garrison, I'm gonna put the question right out here, is what he said. He said it would be very useful for this committee to avoid further legal entanglements down the road when he requested the information. But Kenny's response was, with regard to presenting that advice to this committee or any committee, I'm not able to do so as the Minister of Justice and the Attorney General, as solicitor-client privileges exist. Solicitor-client privilege is what he used as a reason why he wouldn't provide the information. And yet, when the request was made through access to information, no such argument was put forth.
Well, it's just another fancy excuse.
Well, we know we have a caucus now, a cabinet that can have documents declared classified at a whim. Is that the next step, you think? I mean, to avoid any of this crazy access to information entanglement, could they not just have the documents classified and that would be that?
They can do whatever they wish.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they could even govern by order and council, which, I was always opposed to that, even back when Trudeau was the one that was rampant in using orders and council.
Mm-hmm.
And every government since does the same thing. So they can almost govern by order and council, you know. And it's the same thing. The watchdogs for the public, they don't have a lot of teeth other than the reports they make and reporting it to the press. But, you know, what those things are like, usually they're, you know, 1-2 day stories, and that's about the end of it. And they don't have a lot of teeth either.
So
the government's, so what is the penalty when even the Auditor General makes a report? There is no penalty. All he does is report what he considers to be the right or wrong that the government's doing. But there's no enforcement, there's no punishment, there's nothing. And the public, you know, the public, they don't pay much attention. Even the MPs, we get piles and piles of Auditor General reports right across the board through all the different sectors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't even have time to look at them, to read them. It's impossible. It's just so much paper.
Well, no, exactly. And part of the problem we've had with this current government is this desire to introduce omnibus legislation well. I mean, today the Supreme Court of Canada struck down the minimum mandatories on gun possession.
Well, that's a good thing. I actually just wrote a letter comparing it to the gun control bill C-68, where possession of a firearm without a valid permit can land you in jail for up to 10 years.
And mm-hmm.
That's to me
cruel,
unusual punishment.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think today's decision by the Supreme Court does the country great service, and certainly does gun owners and in Canada great service.
Mm-hmm. Well, two issues I have with it. First of all, it's a piece of legislation that was included in an omnibus bill. Had it properly been introduced as a separate piece of legislation, we may not have even had this conversation.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, so again, it goes to this issue we have with this current government, and even Stephen Harper back in the day was saying that omnibus legislation is not good, that we shouldn't be doing this, that it's it's undemocratic, and yet he's doing the same thing.
Well, that's the American approach, you know, with earmarks and throwing everything in the mm-hmm. same pot and passing it under the budget. You know, so they've been doing that forever, and I guess that's how they satisfy the money side of bringing money home
mm-hmm.
their constituency. And but the way we're doing it is basically changing legislation without any debate, without any notification,
mm-hmm.
basically nothing. The public don't even know what's being changed.
Well, no, I mean, I mentioned earlier today the overhaul of the Navigable Waters Act, which was done a couple of years ago now. Same thing through omnibus legislation. This was an act that protected Canadian water, over a million bodies of water in this country since 1885. And these guys come along and arbitrarily decide, well, it just creates red tape.
No, that's a horrible piece of change, horrible change for our environment, and
mm-hmm.
for the future of this country, for the future generations. I think environment is top of mind issue for all Canadians. I think whoever, you know, replaces this government certainly has to look at going back to protect a lot more of the navigable waters in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that begs the question now. I mean, how much Harper legislation? I mean, it's going to take years to repeal this legislation. I mean, how much Harper legislation can we repeal in a short period of time?
Well, if they do it through the omnibus system, they could do it in 1 year.
True enough. True enough. We could. That's a really good point, actually. If they introduce a massive omnibus bill to repeal, yeah, you know what? That's an interesting point.
They
could totally do it. They could do it in one sitting, couldn't they?
Certainly could.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, I know you're running as an independent. Is that what Canadians should look forward to? Should we be trying to elect more independents to the House of Parliament to try and break up this stranglehold on our democracy by these political parties?
Canadians need more members of Parliament who represent the constituencies. You know, even though, as you indicated, they all talk about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, through the election debates, they'll be talking about the same thing again. Come when the writ is called, and they all say the same thing: yes, we'll vote for you until they get to Ottawa. When they get to Ottawa, something strange happens to them, and so that's the way that maybe we should put in a recall system.
I've
always believed in that too, and I mentioned that Jeffrey Simpson years ago, actually, when he first went to Ottawa, he didn't think that was a doable thing, and maybe it wasn't a good thing. I still think it's doable. The American states have it. Their system has it. And
BC has it.
So
BC has it, right?
A recall system here.
I mean, didn't they recall their premier in British Columbia?
Yes, they did.
So, I mean, it can work, obviously.
It can work if the people want to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's an option that's there, you know, and options like this keep the your representative on the straight and narrow.
Well, I urge my listeners all the time to, you know, be the elephant in the room, remember, get to know Harper's record. But, I mean, we really should know the voting record of our elected member of Parliament, and I think when we make an educated decision come election day, part of that decision should involve the record of the current MP, right?
Right. If they're there to represent you, then they should be representing you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be keeping you informed what's going on, not just sending you propaganda from the party.
Well, exactly.
And that applies to across the board, all the parties.
How much do you think this major leak off the West Coast, it was only 2,700 liters of bunker fuel is all it was.
That's what we're told.
How much of that fault you think falls at the feet of the Harper government? Granted, of course, that this was a onboard mishap, but which the captain initially denied. But
whole thing, because their the federal role responsibility is to protect the environment,
mm-hmm.
and they're supposed to be ready to deal with spills. You know, I mean, after all these years of mishaps all over the world, and certainly, but Harper tends to shut things down, and, you know, that's what happens. If you're not prepared, you don't have the infrastructure in place, you can't protect anything. And they're telling us a pretty small number, but how can they tell us what they don't know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the other question is how much of that is gone below the surface.
Well, that's the other thing, right? I mean, the biggest problem I've had so far with this government is the idea they believe that everybody can be self-regulated. Oh, you're self-regulated. I mean, we've had a derailment almost every week, I think, in this country in the last year or so. We've had a rail derailment. We've had leaks from pipelines. Now we've got this water disaster on the West Coast. And some are saying it's the worst environmental disaster in Canadian history, some people are saying. So is that the result of a government that says industry can regulate itself and has abrogated their responsibility, or is it something else?
I think that's their, at least it's Harper's philosophy. I think across the board you can see it in the food industry, in aviation. I'm a pilot, so even going back the last 10 years, they've just cut. Transport is cut, inspectors, and there's so few of them out there
mm-hmm.
inspecting. Basically, their focus is basically, well, the big airlines can look after themselves, and so that that philosophy with transportation on trains is the same, boats on the ocean is the same. So, and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. We know that if there isn't someone watching out for the public, then because private industry, it's profit motivated.
Well, and let's face it, accountability costs money, right?
All costs money.
So that's reality. One other question. I think we should probably wrap this up. I don't want to keep you on the phone for too long, unless you want to hang around. Doesn't matter to me. But a lot of the problems we're seeing, especially with regards to globalization, we've seen the gutting of the manufacturing here in Eastern Canada and all of these other things, and self-regulation. How much of that do you think can be laid at the feet of this idea of investor protection, these clauses that have allowed companies to sue our government if we write legislation that impacts their profitability? I mean, isn't that what regulation does?
All the regulation, the policies that are attributed to trade, the trade agreement, the Pacific Trade Pact and the European, it's all about giving the corporates the rights to make money, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right through the whole spectrum, legal included, so they can sue us for up to, I read an article, they said they could sue, I think it was a pharmaceutical, could sue the country up to 100 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And I know with the European trade back, their criticism of Canada is that we have a supply management system in place. They want supply management to be eliminated from the system.
Mm-hmm.
That would affect, well, lots of people in this country, and certainly Quebec in a big, big way. But Harper is mum, totally mum on all these agreements. He doesn't want to talk about them. The public don't even know what's in them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we know that, you know, the people that benefits are the big corporates.
Well, that's something even CETA, even the European Union is saying, well, we don't mind the deal, but we want to get rid of this investor protection clause.
Right.
Because those countries aren't willing to allow corporations to sue them if they try to protect their people, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's what regulation is all about. I mean, they don't put regulation in place just because they want the companies to pay more money. They do so to protect our water, to protect our roads, our air, our services.
That doesn't seem to be important for this government.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about the corporates getting ahead, and hopefully down the road there's a payback for the people that are involved.
So how do we change the mindset of voters in this country to get them to actually participate? Inky, what do you think is going to be the magic
bullet?
Well,
people like you, you know, talking to Drive Time, talking to people on the radio, and people, your listeners, they need to tell their friends and their acquaintances, people they work with, some of the problems this country is having. And if people don't communicate the future, you know, what the possible future is for this country, then nothing's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
It only changes, the people have all the power, we all say that, and that's true. They do have the power. We still have a right to vote. We still have a right to boot out the governments we don't like. Unless the people become their own watchdog, and there's a lot of organizations out there that are trying to do the same thing, and they're doing a good job, and it's about people. So, but
wow.
Unfortunately, like I said, there's less and less people involved in the political process. So,
mm-hmm.
But I think the saving grace is social media and people like yourself on radio. That's going to help make changes come about.
Well, I want to thank you for that. My guest has been Inky Mark. He was first elected to the House of Parliament in 2004 in June. In September of 2010, he stepped down, decided not to run in 2011 as well. He's now going to be running as an independent. Your riding has been renamed. What's the riding called now?
Well, basically they changed the last, it's currently still Dauphin, Swan River, Marquette, but they dropped the Marquette for Neepawa, a minor change.
So it's still Dauphin, Swan River then?
Marquette, yes. It'll be Dauphin, Swan River, Marquette when it gets dropped.
There you go. So if you are listening in and you are living in that area, this is definitely a candidate you want to think about. And by the way, listeners, he has been a member of Parliament in the past. Some people go, oh, well, you know, you can't trust these guys. Here's a guy who was so upset with what was happening, with the way the leadership was run, and the way they were running roughshod over these members of Parliament, with nothing further to gain other than serving his member, his constituents, Inky decided to step down. So I want the listeners to know that. I think you should be commended on the fact that, you know what, you too are mad as hell and you weren't going to take it anymore.
Relief when I left.
Exactly. Inky Mark has been my guest. Inky, I will call you again, sir. I love chatting with you. It's a lot of fun, and we will keep the listeners up to speed on what's going on. And anything happening in your neck of the woods, if you want to give us a call any time or send me a message on Twitter, be more than happy to bring folks up to speed on that. He is running as an independent, folks. So remember, you know, sometimes an independent voice can be the loudest voice. Because like myself, I'm not beholden to anybody. Thanks, Inky.
Thank you, David.
We're going to go to the news, and we'll be right back with more of the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7.